We have a podcast called Higher Learning with Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay. It's fantastic. It was really great on Friday. They talked to Emmanuel Acha. It was uncomfortable. It was riveting. It was great stuff. And it's a great podcast. Check it out only on The Ringer Podcast Network. We're also brought to you by The Ringer Podcast Network. I have a new Rewatchables coming Monday night. It is the fourth installment of One Word Movie Month. It's a pretty famous movie. And I got to say, it was me and Mallory Rubin and Van Lathan. And it's in the top 10 for me for Rewatchables podcast. The three of us had never done a podcast together. And we had so much fun. And it was a great movie to talk about. I won't tell you what it was, but it's really good. So that's coming Monday night. Coming up on this podcast, because he's crestfallen. You can only imagine. We're going to talk about the Cowboys collapsing yet again. The rest of the round two games. Round three lines. Little parent corner. A surprise guest. It's all next. First, Pearl Jam. All right, taping this a little early today. It's only 7:13 Pacific time
on Sunday night. Oh, exciting.
Yeah. A completely devastated Cousin Sal is here. It's become an annual tradition on the podcast. Cowboys have a terrible loss. Their season ends. Sal, this time he asked for 15 minutes to regroup, I think, or maybe 20 minutes. Is that the longest time you've needed to regroup before we hopped on a pod?
I think I said to breathe. I could regroup in about 4 minutes, but I mean, look, it wasn't the normal end of the season kicking the balls where your nuts are sore till like for 2.5 weeks. But I do feel like I want to throw up. It's the same crap over and over.
Disgusting. Did you talk team. Yourself into a win before the game?
Yeah, I did. The whole week. In fact, I think I left with you saying we're going to beat the Bucks. I didn't think it would be that healthy of a win. And then all week, I'm like, you know what? We match up well. Pollard is the equivalent of Samuel and Purdy. We put some pressure on him. I think it's going to be a close game. The defenses both played about as well as I could. I thought they would. And I don't know, man. It was a weird thing. I don't know if you felt this way, but I mean, of course you didn't feel the other part of this, but with Brett Maher, I was like, oh boy, I feel bad for this guy. And then I'm like, I'm effing pissed. Like, get it together, right? Like, you want to? Yeah. And so it was like a weird emotional roller coaster there. And then he made the field goal. And it's like, all right, he's as good as everyone else, except we're going to have to go for two here if we score at the end. And then there was just terrible. I don't know. I just feel like Dak and our friend Alec, I was texting with him. It's like Dak and McCarthy are not bad enough to move on from either of them, but that combination is just not going to do it, I don't think.
Yeah, you're in no man's land with them.
Yeah.
Dak, you know, they were saying a couple times during the broadcast, so this is a legacy game for Dak Prescott. I'm like, is it? Is there going to be a Dak Prescott legacy? I think he's just on that lower level. I mean, the kicker thing, it was the biggest reason I just couldn't get there with taking the Cowboys +3.5. I just couldn't. And even in the first half, it was a 7-point swing, right? Gould made two good ones and Maher missed an extra point. And you think in the second half, it's going to be even worse, but then he actually got his shit together a little bit and made one. But you shouldn't be over the moon because your guy made a 25-yard field goal in the playoffs.
you're talking about the spread, and normally like a good quarterback to a backup is about a 4 or 5 point difference. But if you know your kicker's not going to make any kicks, that's a 4 or 5 point difference, right? That's a field goal and two extra points. And that was disgusting. But I really just like it was too really just though we let down at the end of that first half was just crazy. Second and two with 1:20 left. Yeah. Dak throws that interception. First of all, we have to be aggressive because the kicker sucks, right? So Pollard gets hurt and Dak throws a terrible interception on 2nd and 2 where we could have at least bled the clock. And then San Francisco does this thing like Shanahan wasn't that great either. He took like 28 seconds before he took a timeout. And then Purdy throws a ball that should have been intercepted. And then Purdy like almost bleeds the clock entirely, the 7 seconds. And then somehow there's 1 second left and they kick. I mean, that was a monster field goal difference. That was a huge 6, 10 point swing right there in 1.5 minutes. So I didn't have a lot of confidence from then on.
It is pretty rough. And Purdy has definitely inherited Tua's mantle of how many near picks did he throw in this game today? Like you dropped three?
Yeah.
They're three bad ones. It's just like he's got the touch, man. It's like, you know, you play with certain golfers and they hit one into the woods and it just bounces back on the fairway. He's in that zone right now. He made some good throws too, but his bad throws never came back to haunt him. Dak had probably four awful throws. Two of them came back to haunt him. They dropped the interception on the game losing drive, but Dak wasn't great either. And I thought watching it, it felt like if you could get ahead of them in the first half into halftime and put that pressure on Purdy, it felt like your pass rush was going to get there. Didn't you feel like your pass rush wore out in the last hour of the game? He had more time.
It's 20 weeks. You should know it's pass rush, okay? I don't want to keep correcting.
Pass rush. Yeah.
I was in the same boat. Like we held McCaffrey to 17 total yards in the first half, and Pollard going out really sucked. But I did feel like even after the big plays like that, they show like Lamb hurts his pinky, right? Very next play or two plays later, 40-yard bomb plus the INT plus the pass interference, you know? I was like, and then they were timid after that. Like they ended up punting on 4th and 5 from the 40. It seemed like both coaches were protecting their quarterback from doing stupid shit. And it ended up hurting the Cowboys more.
I thought Shanahan had a really weird first like 2 hours. And then they started running the ball and doing all the stuff I thought they were going to do the whole game. And I don't know if that was his game plan or they settled into it, but just felt like too conservative, too safe, but not just trying to grind the clock either. I don't really know how to describe what he was doing. And then your team, the power thing was the biggest thing that happened in this game.
Right.
I think he's your best offensive weapon. It's him or Lamb, and Pollard probably for all the stuff he can do on three downs. Once he came out, it just seemed like the team kind of lost its spark. And Dak
couldn't run the ball.
I just don't think Dak's that guy. You know, I don't think he's a bad quarterback, but we always said that joke about like, what's the difference to him and Kirk Cousins? That was kind of a Kirk Cousins game by him today. It was fine. Hit a couple bad throws. He didn't really cost you the game, but he wasn't really awesome either. He didn't carry you.
Right. And I think he's exactly what it is, right? Like a divisional round quarterback, and we'll play a tight game and you have to get lucky to win. Now, all that said, Brock Purdy is going on to the conference championship. So maybe I don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but
Brock had a couple nice throws over the middle. Yeah. Real decisive, good ones. But the big throw of the game was that one on Kittle where it wasn't a
bounced
great
off
throw.
His Kittle face mask seven times. Yeah, yeah. That was interesting.
Well, Kittle made I guess it took him 3 seconds to pull in the catch, and it really seemed like he was going to get beheaded by Diggs.
Right.
And then at the last split second, ducked his head as he caught it. That was the most impressive. And Olsen, Olsen's a tight end. I can't believe like he wasn't talking about it. Holy shit. Like that, like George Kittle almost got knocked out on this play. And instead,
Diggs should have let him know he has no interest in making any contact with anyone for the last month or catching a, you know, easily interceptable ball. And then it wouldn't have been as scary for Kittle. Yeah. That guy was a disappointment in the last few weeks for sure.
Yeah. You got to work through some stuff with you and Diggs, I feel like.
Thank you. Yes. You're right. You're right.
Like if you're running him in the Super Bowl, it might be awkward.
It's a long off season, but yeah, we'll talk it through.
So happen that, like, because they cut right after the game, they go to fortunately, only a 6-man set for the post-game.
I saw that. What
they
happened?
They got rid of Gronk.
Gronk became claustrophobic all of a sudden.
They had seven people twice this weekend, which I just like. Can you imagine if we just had five other people on the podcast right now and there are just five other people in the Zoom kind of staring us, hoping that they could talk? But they cut to the set.
I hope they live forever, but I think Terry and Jimmy are just always going to have them up there even after they expire. They're going to have the tombstones and it's always going to be a 7-man rotation.
You mean after Terry expires 2 years ago?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, they had the six people, and Peyton is one of the six people. And they cut to them and it's a wide shot. Menifee's doing his thing and Peyton's kind of writing something down. And I was thinking like, what's he writing? Is he writing like 25, 26, like it right with the contract numbers that he wants? 25 million,
right.
26, 28 in year three, maybe 30 in year four. But he had to be like, secretly, he's got to be watching these games going, this is great. Oh, this is great. 12 points against the Niners. Niners have a really good defense. I don't think it's like a historically awesome defense. Like, I feel like you could throw on them. You had guys open. CeeDee Lamb felt like he was open like the whole game. 12 points is right. Embarrassing.
I mean, you said it. If Pollard's in there and we have confidence in our kicker, we get to 13 points at least. No, I don't know. If we could, I think it's a winnable game for sure. But we'll talk about the Niners, but I could see them giving Philly some trouble.
Let me ask you this. So,
yeah.
Why bring Maher into this game? I didn't understand it all week. They had this stuff before the game where they said Jerry Jones was on the field talking to him like 2 hours before the game.
Yeah, that helped.
Somebody tweeted like, good. I've never seen that before. Like, why even deal with this? Just bring in another kicker, bring in a fresh face, and just get rid of all the baggage from that last game instead of having it hang over. I just think, to me, that's just like bad management.
Yeah, well, it's weird, right? Because they could have told us Brett Maher went 50 for 50 in extra points during practice this week. He's back. He's got it. It's like, no, it has nothing to do with it, right? It's all game situation. So you don't know at all what you're going to get until he gets out there. And that block kick was flying left. So let's just count that as a miss, even though it's a miss. Anyway, I don't know. I kind of would have liked to have seen what happens if you don't have a kicker at all, right? The only problem is against the Niners defense, you get a Bosa sack and now you're like 3rd and 18 and it's going to be tough to go for it every time. But I almost wanted to see what it's like without a kicker. Either that or hire Chris Bonial, who was part of that Bucks staff that was fired on Monday. How great would that have been? Former Cowboys kicker. Bring him in.
Oh, just bringing him back?
At the losing team fires him as a coach and then he's their guy. But yeah, that was it's a really as bad as missing a quarterback when you have a field goal kicker who is so inaccurate.
Well, there was that moment in the first half when it was like 4th and 4, 4th and 5, and they went for it and they got it. And you think, maybe it's good not to. Maybe it's good not to trust your kicker. Maybe it was a good spot to go to. Right. You ran the ball 22 for 76. 4 for 22 is Dak, especially on one long 11-yarder. Mm-hmm. So the non-running backs in this game were 18 for 58. I thought you were going to run the ball more and better. And I didn't understand that part.
Yeah, I think we had like 12 yards rushing in the second half. Honestly, I don't see what happened there. But
I didn't get that.
Yeah. I don't want to take too much away from the Niners defense because it was really solid.
It was
a little better than I thought. So
Niners rush for 32 for 113. There's a couple different moments there in this game that I was jotting down as it was happening. My first note was Maher, the Maher game. It just felt like, oh my God, when he missed the extra point, it was like, oh my God. But he didn't really rear his ugly head the same way after that. Then I wrote down after Paul got hurt, Zeke is back, was thinking like, how great would this be if Zeke just single-handedly carries them to round 3 with that stupid contract they gave him and then it actually pays off. Then I wrote down, do you trust Dak? 3 question marks. And then I wrote next to it, no. Then I wrote, Purdy hits 12 a.m. because it felt like there was a moment somewhere in that third quarter range where it was like, oh my God, like, even if they get through this game, can they win 2 more games with this guy? But then he kind of settled down a little bit. Then I wrote down the legacy game for Dak Prescott thing. And then the next thing I wrote was, is Dak for Rodgers crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Would you trade for Aaron Rodgers? Do I need Kyle to turn the TikTok camera on?
I don't think so. Throw it in.
You
wouldn't
want 3 years of Rodgers?
No, you think 3? I mean, is it 3 years where, well, first of all, was he even like McCarthy anymore? I'm not sure about that. I have to have Rodgers at
McCarthy. I assume McCarthy is not there either. It's like Sean Payton and Rodgers, something like that.
Okay. Payton and Rodgers. Yeah, I think we have a better chance. I do.
Probably have a better chance, right?
Yeah. I wrote down a few things too. I wrote,
this
sorry to leave this cruel world, family. And then you said, hey, we're on the Zoom. So I got interrupted. But I'm going to finish it after. Yeah. I'm going to finish it afterwards.
And then the last thing I wrote was horrific clock management as always. It was just an epic last couple minutes there. Well, first of all, you had the ball back with a chance to tie and you screwed it up. They get the ball back. Mitchell runs out of bounds for some reason. You get the ball back with 45 seconds left. Schultz just completely fucks up 35 of those seconds. And then it all ends with this Zeke Elliott play that Greg Olsen was all excited about. He's like, right. He's an eligible receiver, but they can still lateral to him. And he's right. And he's pumped.
It's my flag football team. I'm like, he's going to get pummeled if they even rush one guy. He's going to go flying 8 yards into the backfield. And that's what happened.
And then he just got crushed. He got sent backwards.
Yeah.
And it was immediately tackled. And it was definitely a little similar to that crazy Colts pump play, but that's how it ended. But it was
About on the other side of the 2 minute warning where the Cowboys had a rush, but didn't rush long enough to punt with, and then the idiot on the Niners fair catches it. And if he runs it, it was a whole weird thing. He fair catches it with 2:05. So if there's 2:07 left, the Niners don't pass there, right? But because it's 2:05, it's the last play before the 2 minute warning anyway. And he throws Purdy perfect up the middle, first down to Kittle.
Yeah.
And then, then all the stuff you said with the running out of bounds and everything.
I thought that was Shanahan's greatest moment, was throwing with 2:05 left. It didn't even occur to me they were going to do that. And then when he did, I was like, oh, I should have known.
Kittle is pretty gutty, I will say, Purdy, throwing back there. He really doesn't get flustered and doesn't panic in the pocket and doesn't ball up like a lot of these quarterbacks would.
Yeah, well, Shanahan, they had that quote that he said, he has more confidence than any rookie I've ever coached.
Hmm.
It's like, I don't know. I mean, Dallas loses, but the good thing for us is we were on this from that first weekend because we both watched that first game. We were like, this guy did not look like a rookie. He did not look scared. He looked like he belonged. And he's carried himself that way ever since. He's 8-0. And it's really a remarkable story. I got to say, I feel like, we say this every week, but I'm taking it for granted that on 3rd and 9, he's just going to hit Kittle and McCaffrey. This guy, he could have gone 4 years without playing. Just think even if Trey Lance never gets hurt and maybe Jimmy doesn't come until much later in the season, there's a world in which Brock Purdy doesn't play one game until he's 28.
Yeah, he was the last guy drafted. It's not like the Niners, they probably had four players they wanted to decide between then, right? It's not oh boy, what a steal if he's still around with the last pick. The very last player drafted.
Who did you watch the game with?
I watched with Mikey Meatballs and my buddy Scott. Just Cowboy fans. We only had Cowboy fans here today.
When did the mood shift into, oh my God, we're actually going to lose this. This is fucking bullshit.
I think right at halftime, honestly, even though I know we had a chance in the second half. Pollard getting hurt. Pollard hurt and a bum kicker. And a sketchy quarterback is, I mean, what you'd have to get really lucky. And the Niners were the ones getting lucky, right? Like I said, with the clock management to get a field goal off right before the half, the throw off the face mask, Donovan Wilson holding by the goal line, like a little weird, stupid holding on a run. It was the right call, but when do you ever defensive hold on a run? Just garbage.
It's very rare.
Team.
That was a rare one.
If McCarthy could put together a team with a great defense and the spread out run game like Shanahan would, then fine. Dak could be your guy, but I don't think they could coexist and get us to the Super Bowl. I really don't.
So what do you do if you had to get rid of one of them? Who are you getting rid of, the coach?
I think the kicker is pretty good.
I assume he's out. So you have to choose. You can only get rid of one coach or QB. Who do you get rid of?
I mean, what do you do? McCarthy has 25 regular season wins. Can you do that? I'm not worried about him going to another team or in the division or anything like that, but I think it has to be coach. I think it has to be. Start somewhere. Because, the other thing is Dan Quinn, we're going to lose him too. I feel he really gets a starting job somewhere.
I was shocked by how many people love Dallas this week. I was also shocked by how afraid I was to bet on the 3.5. And I ended up taking the -3 at -130 in real life. I did. The half point scared
me.
What
do you mean?
The Niners. I was like, the 3.5. The 3 just felt much safer. On the $1 million picks, I did the 3.5. But it felt like everybody liked Dallas in this game. And I thought the line was going to even move down to 3. It never did. But for the most part, when you watch them first quarter, their defense seems so fast. Parsons was incredible today. I mean, I hope somebody makes a YouTube clip of all the times he just looked like he was shot out of a fucking cannon.
Phenomenal.
Really awesome. So you got that. I thought CD Lamb, you know, it was like, is he a one or is he like a one and a half? Or it'd actually be nice if you had like the second one and a half. And I have, but I thought he was a one by the end of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you get that. Wow, you're crestfallen. Do you want to just stop the pod?
I'm sorry. No, I actually want to give you a credit with that. I'm not supposed to. I'm happy with we have CD Lamb and Pollard and those guys. But you did mention $1 million picks. And I mean, it's a tremendous franchise. I mean, you did it outdoors this week. Where were you, like Mount Baldy? I did get a kick, though, out of you like, I forgot what you said. You led into I love the Giants, this Daniel Jones, most confidence in him as a quarterback. All right, next game. I'm taking the Giants. Next game, Cowboys, Niners. You can't overestimate the Cowboys based on what they did last week. We just did the same with the Giants. I had them too, but
you know what my mistake was with that? I didn't think the Giants were like incredible last week. They won the game, but it wasn't like, oh my God, here comes, it wasn't like your game.
We went too crazy.
Dallas looked like a juggernaut.
The Vikings really sucked, but we can get into that.
Let's take a break. I want to talk about the Giants.
All right, I'll get through it. Yeah.
All right, the other NFC game, Giants-Eagles. When did you know this game was over? Because it felt like when the Eagles were driving to make it 14-0, and I had the Giants, and I had a couple teases parlays that I stupidly put them in, knowing that this could, you know, I thought the Giants could be super frisky and maybe even like get in the fourth quarter, make it a 3-point game. But I knew there was a chance that they just got annihilated. I felt like during that second Eagles drive, at some point, even before they scored, I was like, oh my God, this is over. There's no way. I'm not even going to cover the 7.5. When did you know?
Well, now I'm forgetting. Did they go up 14 before the Giants went on 4th and 8? Because I feel like Daboll was wrong on every fourth down decision.
No, it was 7-0 when he did that.
Right.
And when he did that, I was like, oh, he doesn't think they can stop the Eagles. Because that was, I don't think it was like, oh, I'm going to get a little aggressive. I think he was like, we're not going to be able to stop the Eagles. I need points. And if we don't get this, we're going to lose anyway, was how I interpreted that. I didn't think he had a good game at all. I thought it was bad.
No.
But that's how I interpreted that.
But you and I always talk about, all right, these fourth and shorts and everything, they're, you know, it's based on momentum a lot of time, right? And, and this was not fourth and short. This was 4th and 8. And it was coming off a sack, right? Yeah. So now you're coming off a sack. The place is going bonkers. And you're throwing to no-name receivers down 7-0. And then you're right. So that, to me, that was when, right before they scored 14. But they really did look almost from the start that they were just running downhill, right? Like, when like Kenneth Gainwell is eating you up and breaking tackles and everything, the offense is so spread out. They were just pushing him around. It just looked like a total mismatch.
I rarely notice this or care about this, but I really thought it was a huge mistake in the moment when they deferred on the kickoff. I just didn't get it. Because if you're the Giants, like,
right,
I want to have a long first drive. I want to at least get a field goal. I want to have a little momentum. Worst case scenario is I defer and the Eagles score and it's 7-0. And now their fans are fired up. I didn't understand why they did that. They're not good enough to be like, oh, well, in the second half, if we hang around. The other thing that I noticed that I wish I'd thought of before was the difference between how good the Eagles secondary was versus the Giants receivers. It really felt dramatic because they had like some coverage sacks or almost sacks. Jones had time a couple times. There was like literally nobody open. So I went 3-1 this week, but I got that one so wrong. It almost felt like I went 2-2.
Yeah, but we got the Bengals so right. So that'll be fun to talk about. But you, the Eagles were damn good. The Vikings were bad. Every crossing route worked against the Vikings. Like you said, the Eagles secondary hung in there. Coverage sacks. I think they had 70 sacks this year, 60 from the defensive line.
From the front four.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's from the front four. And I don't know. Maybe we just... you know, this was one of the picks that everybody you knew had the Giants, right? By Friday.
Which was a red flag. By Saturday, it became a concern. I will say, though, I thought this was a really hard week in general. Mm-hmm. Every game had some variable. And I thought for the Eagles, like, we just had no idea if Hurts was going to be good.
Yeah, right.
And I couldn't get that out of my head. Like, I'm going to lay 7.5 and this guy might not be able to throw. His throwing looked fine. It didn't look like he totally wanted to get hit. Mm-hmm. And there were some times when he slid way earlier than he usually slides, or he just, I thought he was great. He navigated the not taking hits part of that game in a really interesting way that I know San Francisco had to have noticed, right? They're going to go into this next week and think like, we're gonna fucking hit the shit out of this guy. This is every tougher, time. Anytime we can chip him, anything, we're hitting him.
Yeah, it looked like he was jogging for first downs, right? Like rolling left and jogging and getting like seven out of bounds. Like, wow, this seems way too easy. I don't know. I know we praised Daboll and everything, but you know what his record was his last 10?
Yeah. Wasn't that 4-6?
3-6-1.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe
their linebackers
coach
were
of the
so
year
bad.
Votes taken away. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like the right four teams are in there, but that one was one of those. There's also a world where they were up 7-3 and Hurts looked like shit. And
But
for the Eagles, now you have to worry about them that they look too good in round two and heading into this round three. Whereas the Niners looked a little iffy, Brock Purdy. I don't think we need to talk about that game that much, though. Let's talk about the two AFC games.
All right.
Bengals-Bills. So many storylines out of this.
Yeah.
The Bengals were so impressive in that game. I wasn't as worried about their O-line as others.
I wasn't either.
And you and I both thought it should have been Bengals +3, something like that. The 5.5, it just felt like there were 2.5 extra points. So I love getting that. I thought they really had a chance to win. But the key thing was like the Bills don't have a good pass rush. And the Bills, I don't know, we watched teams kind of go up and down on them for the last couple weeks. And the Bengals in that game before it got stopped, they were moving the ball on them and doing whatever they wanted. And they just came out. It was just long drives. They ended up with like 30 first downs. It was one of those, Romo said it at halftime. He said, I've seen a lot of these. Jim, seen a lot of these games. Bengals are moving the ball. They look very confident. I don't feel good for Buffalo right now. Like he saw it right away.
Yeah, I think like we were texting about this and like, all right, they both look bad, right? The Bengals look bad and the Bills look bad last week. But I was willing to give Burrow, first of all, Burrow did not look bad last week, right? So he had made whatever adjustments. And you're right about the offensive line. The worst part about the offensive line, three guys being out, is when one goes out in the middle of the game, right? So Williams goes out in the middle of the game, then you got to make all those adjustments. So that's going to be a mess. Plus, they're very physical, Baltimore. Like I just throw all those AFC North results out, I think, pretty much when team goes on to play somebody else because they're so tough. Physically, so much more than every team. But I'm trying to figure out like who's a boxer or who is an MMA star like that not great, but you'll never look good against them offensively.
It's like everyone from Philly.
Yes, everybody from Philly.
The AFC North is Philly. It's just like don't fight fat. No, don't take that fight. You're gonna break your cheekbone.
Yeah. Like Pernell Whitaker was great, but in his later years, like you just couldn't knock him out. And he whatever.
Yeah.
That's an older reference, but I'm sure there's UFC guys. But I still think Burrow is number one. I think he's the best. I think he's better than
Mahomes.
I was
going to ask you that. Who has your number one spot right now?
He's number one. I'm most kind of like confidence factor. I think Burrow. I think if I were going to start a team, I would stick with Burrow. He's so damn good and so smooth, and he's never going to hurt you. And, you know, yeah, you're right about the three linemen being out, but that Williams had given up the most sacks at any lineman. Like, he had given up personally 11 sacks to Burrow. So I'm like, all right, with a week of practice, they're going to be able to figure this out. Plus, Allen had been dumped 7 times last week. So, but I never had seen a team lose home field advantage more than the Bills. Didn't they seem like they were slipping around all game and cornerbacks and everybody, they couldn't adjust until like the third quarter and it was too late.
We can't criticize the Bills enough for that game. I mean, you can, the actual performance, it looked like they thought it was like week 6. It just, they weren't flying around. The Bengals, you know, one thing, and I like the Bengals, I picked them anyway, but one thing I didn't even think about for the money line was how offensive the whole selling tickets for the Atlanta game was to them.
Yeah.
I was looking at it the other way because like Warren Sharp had that video this weekend.
I know Warren Sharp owes us thousands of dollars, by the way. I think we would have pulled the trigger more.
That really scared me because he had this video about how they're selling the tickets already in Atlanta. They assigned Cheffers to the game, who's like notoriously pro home team, all that
8-0, Bills were 8-0.
Then
Cheffers,
it's like Hamlin's coming. I had I had the Bengals in a straight up, and I ended up doing a Bills parlay with the Niners because I got scared to try to defray some of the costs. This is in real life, not whatever. But yeah, I think they looked just kind of half speed. That was one piece. And then the Josh Allen part, is it going to come out that he has like a torn ulnar nerve or something? Or like a, what would be the ulnar nerve? You can't tear an ulnar nerve.
I think that's under your foot. I don't know. Where is it?
I don't know. I've offended like 20 doctors right now. How about this? A fucked up ulnar nerve or a fucked up elbow. Is it going to come? His throws were sailing. And it was like what we talked about last week with the hero ball stuff against Miami. Like they have these third and twos. Use your fucking legs. We were texting each other during the game. Like, use your legs. You should have 20 runs in this game. And then the bigger picture to me is like, they've built this team that's basically a dome team. It's this speed team that's not really physical, that can't really audible and run the ball and do the kind of stuff you would need in a game like this. Whereas the Bengals have the kind of team. So you have the Bills, they're home. It's terrible weather. They have the ultimate quarterback you would want for this game, Josh Allen, who should have had like 22 rushes, and they fucking sucked. And it's like, if I'm the Bills, I'm looking at this like, wait a second. What did we do wrong? We've apparently built the wrong team. Cold weather, one seed. This is everything you'd want.
Yeah. Josh Allen run the ball. Trevor Lawrence run the ball. Dak Prescott run the ball, right? I think we were saying that at some point, for hours this weekend.
Lawrence waited 2 hours to start running the ball. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. You're faster than anybody in your team except ETN.
Burrow's just better. He's just better. He's better. I think you're going to see, well, it's going to be a gimpy Mahomes, but you're going to see he's better anyway, Burrow. But they were physical. I mean, when Mixon goes over 100 yards, you know, you hadn't seen that. And he just spreads the ball out. I think like Chase Hurst and Pirine had probably a half a dozen catches each. It's just a really good, solid, you know, stable, deep team.
It was my favorite team heading into the playoffs before all those injuries. I didn't tell you this. When I was in Colorado, the gambling's legal there, and I had some FanDuel money, and I bet $250 in Colorado on a Bengals 49ers Super Bowl at 20.
That's what I did. You got what, 20?
I think 20-1. I think we were talking about it that week.
Yeah,
but I was like all excited. Now I have to go back to Colorado if it happens. But but I thought heading into the playoffs those were, I thought, the two teams that I felt the best about. And then you lose 3 of 5 linemen. Then Karras gets hurt during the game. And it just felt like, they might go sideways. I also I'm not a huge Zach Taylor fan. Yeah. And he makes me nervous and he does some weird stuff. But I thought his game plan, all the stuff today, that team was so locked in. They're flying around. They're hitting the shit out of the Bills. I thought everything they did was really, really, really high end. I was impressed.
I mean, they definitely had a chip on their shoulder, right? They didn't think they should be playing on the road. Everybody's leaving them for dead. I don't know. Maybe word got around that they were a 5.5, 6-point underdog. You know, you got this conspiracy thing. And by the way, that the league needs to leave that alone. I know they wanted that to happen. You know, they wanted to test out the neutral field, whether Sharp was right or not. That's ridiculous. We don't need that. That was a beautiful game in the snow, right? It was nice to look at. And theoretically, it should have helped the Bills or at least not be a disadvantage. But we need more of that in football.
Totally agree. Yeah, there was I didn't even fully realize this because I don't know if the Bengals talked a lot about it. Pretty heavy nobody believes in us vibe coming out of the game from them about they were selling the tickets in Atlanta already. And you know, that's like one of my number one playoff manifesto things. I was already in on them, but I didn't realize that they were that pissed off. Like Burrow, couldn't wait to mention the postgame.
Go get those refunds.
About the refunds. So
love it.
That little rallying thing really helped them. And I really do think they have the best team.
Either
conference.
Romo touched on it. We're constantly trying to compare Burrow to Mahomes or, you know, whoever else, Herbert or some of the top quarterbacks, Allen. Should we be comparing him to Peyton Manning? Like a young Peyton Manning? Just with that arm?
I don't think so. I don't think Manning moved like that. To me, he reminds me of Brady before he hurt his ACL. Like that 07 Brady, where he just could make every throw and just had the most charisma and could move around in a real way. I don't know. He he certainly seems like he's got some fuck you in him. Did you see that game where he's, or the interview after when he, I forget the exact quote, but he was like, it was like him and Mahomes. It was like, well, we knew it was coming to this. Like the best QBs, the best
yeah,
team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like he like did a little compliment for himself. I was like, oh, Joey B.
I'm with feeling you. I like everything about that guy. You and I are going to go see 80 for Burrow a couple weeks from now.
That's I can't wait. Well, yeah. You were mad they overturned the Chase TD and like the longest control it until it hits the ground I think we've ever had. He had the ball for like 18 seconds before the ground caused the fumble.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's just a great throw and a great catch. And I know there has to be a rule in place, but we really want to overturn those athletic plays. And yes, he had it enough. He had it twice, actually, before the Milano hit, I think. And then he hits the frozen ground and it jars loose a little bit. Like, come on. What are we doing anymore?
I wrote down a couple things for this. I think Cincy, in The Godfather, when he's driving after the big meeting, Don Corleone, mm-hmm. with Duvall, and he's like, insist with Barzini, blah, blah, blah. And Duvall says, you mean Tattaglia? He's like, nah, Tattaglia's a pimp. I didn't realize until today it was Barzini all along. That Barzini was the Bengals and Tattaglia was the Bills. The Bills were a pimp.
I like it. Yep.
They're
driving through they're paying the toll right now. It's not gonna be pretty.
I gotta ask, like, do you feel differently about Josh Allen? There's some like James Harden potential. It's not quite turned the TikTok camera on, but it's a little like, yet again. Now, people would say, no, last year they had it and the defense choked with 13 seconds left. But I don't know. He's supposed to be the equal of Mahomes and Burrow, and he just didn't look like that the last 6 weeks. So if he's not injured, we need to find out.
First of all, he always has that blood immediately on his elbow. You ever see that? And the white sleeve, he has the he has the Curt Schilling thing going every game in the first quarter. It's like, are you not washing that shirt, or did that really just happen?
This is lucky
first
shirt.
It didn't seem like he got dumped to the ground. But yeah, look, say what you will about the team and Von Miller's absence, like hurting them. Josh Allen needed to be better. And
yeah,
he does this weird thing where when he's running the ball, I don't think this helps. When he's tackled, he'll like spin it. He'll spin the ball. A lot of times he'll be upset with the ref because he thought he got hit late or something. But the moment he goes down, he spins it. And it's like, oh, was that a fumble? Because now we're so used to see, like, he actually fumbled when he was down twice, and they didn't even mention it. But you know, he's losing the ball almost every single time he takes it and runs with it. I don't remember that from him. So he's got to reprove to us that he's not going to be the turnover prone Josh Allen, right? I mean, they had three turnovers in each of the last three before this game.
And he sailed some big passes. Like, he had Diggs on the first drive, missed them. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of third and twos or whatever. They ran the ball 19 for 63. Cincy ran the ball 30 for 172. And Josh was 8 for 26 in this game. Diggs only had 4 catches for 35 yards. It never felt like they figured out that second, third receiver thing. It was like Gabe Davis was so awesome last year. But I left that game and I left the season with them thinking like they built a team that like it's like they thought they were playing Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's like this finesse team. That for a game like that, it just felt like the Bengals were way better suited. And then you think, like, did they miss their window? Would be the next question.
Well, yeah, maybe. And I think you're right. They finesse and they can't out finesse like Mahomes, right? And they're not tough enough to beat Cincinnati.
Yeah, they're no man's land.
Yeah, you talk about like coaches. I really don't know if I take a job in the AFC because you have to go through Cincinnati or Kansas City, and Buffalo is like the lesser of the three. That's really, really tough if you're going to be a quarterback or a
and Jacksonville's like, you know, Jacksonville might be two guys away from like circling the conversation at least. Other thing is, you know, the defensive coordinator was awful. I have a couple Bills fans in my life and all of them are like, Leslie Frazier, get this guy out of here. They gave up the game-tying field goal with 13-second thing last year, right, which almost could have been fireable in the wrong hands anyway. But I think after that, it seems like they need to do something. The other thing I was thinking was, We all thought that Hamlin was going to be such an emotional lift. Do we just, because we're fans, do we overrate emotional lifts? Like, once those guys are out there, are they really thinking like, oh, I got to try harder. DeMar Hamlin's here. Maybe we just overthink that.
Well, one thing that wasn't talked about with all DeMar Hamlin stuff is how much they needed DeMar Hamlin on the field, right?
Right.
Because he was replacing Poyer, and then he got, obviously, he was out of there, and then his replacement got out of there, and they had like a number four playing in that position. Like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. I mean, I know Hamlin's number three, but like this is what they were really thin back there. And yeah, you're right. You don't want to look at it like this because in the movies, Hamlin doesn't speak for weeks and then a pot appears on the Jumbotron and then like the fans go crazy and Josh Allen's
just
inspired. But you know, Hamlin was at the facility every day this week, I think, right?
So yeah.
They didn't, I don't know that they had any emotion. Not that that should have been the game plan at all.
The thing is, it's the playoffs. Everybody's trying their absolute hardest. So it's hard to get an emotional lift. Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought, maybe Buffalo's bad luck didn't get enough attention or thought about. Like, we kind of glossed over how awful the 13 seconds loss was, their Super Bowl history, the whole thing. And then this year, you and I, we did the over-under pod before the year, and everybody's like, Buffalo, put them in. And I don't know, it's Buffalo. It's like your team. It's the Cowboys. Yeah. We have 30-plus years now of the Cowboys falling on their faces at the worst time. Like, at some point, might have to prove with any of these franchises. You kind of, the Chargers are another one.
Yeah, maybe, well, that's the thing.
Maybe we kind of need to see it.
Yeah, you get teams that win 12 and 13 games of the year, and I'm still like more depressed than I am if I'm a Lions fan, which is saying a lot, or you know, any of these middling teams that have 7, 8, 9 wins. So,
yeah, you're really down. Should I just start talking like Prince Harry to cheer you up?
Yeah, just talk. Yeah, tell me, give me your best.
Sad,
Prince
we got to take a break.
Let's just do Collinsworth for 25 minutes.
My butler just made me a latte.
Oh, wow. By the way, what about Al Michaels and Prince Harry next year? You think that saves
it? That'd be great. Can we have that? How about we had all these playoff games. Like we had one of the games was announced by Moose Johnson and Joe Davis.
It's not
it's
good.
A round two playoff game. Buck and Aikman are fucking home. We can't get Buck good. And Aikman for one round?
No, nobody
would guys?
Just hire them. Just give them $2.5 million for that.
Why
Saturday
can't Fox just be like, hey, ESPN, $2 million for Buck and Aikman for one game. And ESPN, like, cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's not happening, but you know how I feel, and I think you feel the same way. Where's Gus Johnson in all of this?
Fox has him locked.
They have him locked up under contract for college. You put him in that booth, and all of a sudden, that Giants-Eagles is a three-point game in the fourth quarter, and it's exciting.
Joe Davis and Moose Johnson. What the hell? Every time I see Moose Johnson, I think of the Shaq roast.
Yeah.
Moose was it Emmett Smith?
Yeah.
Moose Johnson went up and he gave like this really nice 15-minute speech with no jokes about Emmett Smith. And then Jeff Ross followed him. And he's like, I was going to do this whole thing, but Moose Johnson stole all my shit.
He had never seen a roast before. And he had never, it's like he's never seen a football game before either. What he said, I don't know.
It's pretty rough.
It's as Buck exciting as a football fullback on your fantasy team is basically the equivalent.
Tough one for Buffalo though. And
yeah,
I do think like there's this alternate universe. I think since he would have beaten Buffalo in that game, the game when Hamlin went down, they stopped it. I just think they were locked in that game. They were going to win. And maybe they're the 2 seed and Buffalo's the 3 seed. And now like the whole dynamic shifts. Hamlin's playing. Now it's in Cincinnati. Buffalo's getting 3.5 and maybe all of it's different. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
We'll take a break and then we'll talk about Jacksonville, KC, and we'll do guess.
Oh, I love that game.
Guess the lines. All right. Jacksonville, KC, that was the first game of the day. Had a dramatic, heroic cover by the Jags. Just getting it under, getting it to 7, getting it under the 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
Collinsworth, he's like Santa Collinsworth now. He's like, Patrick Mahomes, his leg came off. This guy's got a tougher one. He's got one leg.
It's unfair, Bill. He just took a crap on the 50-yard. You see that little turd over there? Let me circle it with the telestrator. He's really...
Mike, he took ankle off and he turned it around. And, it's unfair. How does he do it? It's unfair.
Yeah, well, they made it fair. They went after his leg and all of a sudden it was fair. And every one of us who had the Chiefs on the money line was biting our hands off.
Well, then Henny comes in. He's 5 for 7 for 23 yards. And Collinsworth is making it seem like it's like Tom Brady against the Falcons coming back from 28-3. Yeah, right. Henny, my God. And it's like, wait, he completed a couple outs.
23 yards, right, like you said, on that 98-yard drive. Yeah. He was the orchestrator. Like, what? He orchestrated it? All right.
Yeah.
23 yards.
They get a
15-yard
penalty. They get a 40-yard run.
And on 3rd and 3, he throws a 1-yard pass to Kelsey in double coverage. And Kelsey breaks the tackle and gets the first down, gets like 7 out of it. So that was 7 of the 23. Like, I don't know. And then, you know, all right, Collinsworth, they were all going crazy. But that, and I hate Jason Garrett. Afterwards, I'm like, did these NBC idiots even watch the game? Enough with the Chad Henne shit. If Kelsey, if Kelsey has COVID and has to sit out, the Chiefs lose that game by 10. Like, he had 13 catches. He had 14 catches. And the rest of the Chiefs had 13. Like, he is the man. It's Kelsey and it's Gronk and it's nobody else. You could take your pick over there. But I kind of think Kelsey reinvented the game for big guys just being able to get open all the time.
Yeah, if you and I were on the NBC set, it would have gone, they would have passed around and Garrett would have done his grinning joker thing and it would have gone to us and we'd be like, can we just fucking cover Travis Kelsey? Just put two guys on him. They have nobody else. Who's beating you? Marquez Valdez-Scantling? Sky Moore, who's beating you on this team? Just cover Kelsey. Put a guy right in front of him, chip him at the line, have another guy behind him, and let him throw to everybody else in the Chiefs. Kelsey, 14 catches, he wouldn't have 5 if I was the defensive coordinator. I'm like, I don't care. He can go 39 for 50 with all the other guys in the team. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Kelsey's getting 5 catches. That's it. There were plays when they didn't even have anybody on him.
Well, not to mention, as limited as Mahomes was in the second half, it's all 3-step drops, right? And that 3rd step is going to be on a gimpy leg. So who's open 6 yards downfield? It's Kelsey all the time. Unless you chip him or, like you said, there's 2 guys on him. Yeah, you're right. Sky Moore over the top is not going to be the problem at that point.
It was stupid. And Collinsworth loved Pacheco too. That was the other one. Oh, is this Pacheco? 7th round pick, Mike. Yeah.
He just urinated on my leg. Did you see that, Mike?
It's another angry run. He's just so good. Oh my God!
With Chad Henne, they you know, anytime Chad Henne gets in the game, like, you know, it's enough. You know, obviously, like we said, Kelsey helped him out a lot, but they immediately have to show how much money he made over his career. You know, it's like Chad Henne has earned $40 million, and he must be like, all right, what the hell did I do? I'm just coming in here. The starter got hurt. Leave me alone with this.
The actual conversation is like the guy played on the Jaguars for a while and they probably, all the Jaguar fans are probably like, this guy sucks. This is huge.
Yeah, right.
They just, Patrick Mahomes is out. This guy's in that we used to watch and make fun of. We went this far talking about this game without even mentioning this. I thought the Jags should have won. I really think they left that on the table. I thought that was a W. All of these different moments in that game, the 98-yard drive with Henny. Like, that's, how do you let that happen? Mm-hmm. They fumbled on the 4, that Agnew play. They had that other play when they got the turnover and then they somehow went backwards 12 yards and had to punt instead of kick field goal. Felt like they left 2 field goals on the table. They left that play on the 4-yard line on the table. And for the most part, I know Mahomes was hurt, but it felt like they had everybody shut down except for Kelsey. I don't know. It felt winnable to me. And then what you said before that we were talking about during the game, like Lawrence not realizing for 2 hours that he should be moving around and trying to create plays. But once he started doing that, it felt like they were unstoppable.
It drives me nuts that there aren't more design runs for these running quarterbacks. Like it's my biggest pet peeve, I think. But I think you're right. And, you know, I hate to do this. I know you get mad. I always interject like NBA comparisons and everything. But second quarter, early 3rd quarter, from when Mahomes was out to when Mahomes was still getting his footing, no pun intended, they didn't take advantage at all, right? And it's kind of like, all right, you know, Luka Doncic is going to say, I can't even say the name, is going to be sit out 4 minutes.
and you ended up getting outscored 14-4 in those 4 minutes. Like, that's, you can't do that, right? You had to, that is really when they had to put their foot on the pedal.
But I almost would have called a timeout when it was one of those third downs with Henny. You just like get the defense. You're like, dude, it's fucking Chad Henny. He hasn't played in 5 years. Let's get a stop. Right. This guy sucks. Right. There's a reason he hasn't started in 9 years, but they let him go down the field.
But what a cover though by Coach Peterson. We can't give say enough about it, right?
So
down
proud 10, of him.
Could have scored, could have gone for the touchdown like a lot of coaches would, but cuts it to 7.
Coach it was even Peterson. Better than that. They did the thing where they threw it into the end zone to see if they could get one, which is what you should do. And say, like, some of these teams, they do the dumb thing where they throw it over the middle and then they score with 4 seconds left. And it's like, well, that
was
stupid.
Kill more clock.
Yeah. They did it. They did it perfectly. They got the cover. And I thought that was the hardest game of the weekend because you knew it was going to come down to the Jags with the ball, trying to somehow get it from double digits to the 7. That's exactly what happened. The line was too high. They had to jack. I feel like the science of gambling, so many people know what they're doing now that there's real value in some of these games. I thought that line was 2 points too high, but they have to get it over the 9 so they don't want us to tease the KC down under 3.
Right, right.
So they're just like, you know what? It's 9.5. And then you're getting like 2 extra free points, basically.
They can make it whatever. The Chiefs have no interest in covering this year. Are they like 6-11-1 now? It's like Andy Reid's just like, win and move on. That's all.
Well, we have, first of all, nice little starter for Jacksonville now that they can go into the offseason. I thought Kirk, everyone made fun of that signing. I thought he was good in all the do or die games that they were in. He was seen over and over again, and now they'll probably get one more receiver.
Well, we made fun of him. But yeah, their pass rush was good, right? Like right from the start, you knew Mahomes was going to have a little bit of trouble, wasn't going to be able to do exactly what he wanted to do. But they spent $260 million in the offseason on free agency, right? And so that should at least let them, you know, allow them to win the terrible AFC South.
Yeah.
Plus another game. I think you're right. I think they move a few parts around. They keep Peterson and they're right in there for, you know, one or two wins in the playoffs next year.
What do you think their over-under is next year?
Oh.
Like 9.5?
What was it this year?
Lower.
It was like 6. Oh, yeah, no, 6 or 6.5.
And they're probably like minus 150 already for the AFC South, depending on what happens.
Right. Yeah, I think 9, 9.5 is probably right.
All right, let's guess the lines.
Let's do it. Wow, it's down to 2 games, huh? And then what, 1?
What's the first game and what's the second game?
The first game is San Francisco at Philadelphia. They're doing the NFC early. I would have been mad anyway if that was a neutral game at night. Because that just looks like shit, right? If it's in dome at night, I don't like that at all. So, but anyway, San Francisco, Philly early, and then 6:30 Eastern, Cincy at KC.
I do feel like these are the best 4 teams.
I'm with you. Yeah, it's fine.
These are the right 4, and then I think Dallas and Jacksonville. Were
no
probably
Buffalo,
like,
huh?
And Buffalo. Those 3 are probably like in that next level. And I think the mistake everybody made was thinking it was 5 teams, not 4, including me. I thought heading into the season, I thought we had 5 really good teams and then some lingerers.
Yeah.
I do think the Chargers, had they not fucked things up and had Mike Williams not gotten hurt, I think they could have beaten the Bills or the Chiefs. I really do. I think that I look at the teams that didn't make it and that's the one that stands out to me. And I think Pittsburgh could have beaten Buffalo in round 1. I said that last week.
Mm. Wow.
If they had been the 7th seed, I think Buffalo was dying to lose to somebody at home and have somebody just run the ball and control the clock and outcoach them. They were going to do that at some point.
I like watching them, Pittsburgh, but, you know, yeah, maybe win a game upset, but a team that struggles to score 20 is just not going to win 3 in a row. And the Chargers, just as scatterbrained as they are, are just never going to win 3 in a row. Coach, kicker, everything else, injuries, dumb doctors trying to kill everybody, you know.
Well, last week, I think I'm going to make a prediction every Sunday on the podcast. Because last week I told you.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to make it. Kyle, maybe we'll make this a running segment and we could cut out. Because last week I told you the Chargers were going to be too cheap to fire Brandon Staley.
Mm-hmm.
They did not fire Brandon Staley. They fired his offensive coordinator, but they were too cheap to fire him. That's how it's going to play out. This week's prediction. I think Aaron Rodgers ends up on the Jets. I think he's done in Green Bay, and I think he ends up on the Jets. And my backup choice would be Vegas. But I think Aaron Rodgers will be a Jet next year.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'd like to lock that in as my prediction for the week of January 22nd.
Wow. Can I make one?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to stop following football?
That'd be great. If I can only do it. It's just not in my blood. I think, though, Shannon Sharp is going to win Dana White's slap fight competition. And he's going to hold that title for 37 years.
Even I thought the slap league was reprehensible. It was like four guys got knocked out. What is this? How do we in 2023 have a league where people get slapped unconscious?
There's not a lot of defense, I noticed, in that, which is problematic.
You just kind of have to flinch.
Yeah. Like, all right, I hope my brain doesn't rotate in my head faster than my head turns and I don't get knocked out. How is this legal in any New York? It can't be legal in the United States. Remember how much trouble UFC had getting a license?
Chris Nowinski, who's done a lot of good CT.
Yeah.
He's been like the point man for all the CT research. He was, he wondered if the next version of this would be called Who Could Survive a Stabbing? And I was thinking, like, it's really not much different than watching people slap each other unconscious as an actual league.
Right.
I thought that was just nuts. Wait, why did we get on this subject?
That was my dumb prediction. Yeah, it was my prediction. Yeah.
The Shannon Sharp thing where, so I tweeted about it and people are like, why are you so mad? It's like, I'm not mad. I just like, what are the rules for sitting courtside? So he's an NFL Hall of Famer. So he's allowed to mix it up with the players, but like, can Jalen Rose now do that? Kornheiser?
Right. Kornheiser would be funny. I think you said Kornheiser.
I said Kornheiser, but like, is it like, so you had to be a player there? Is there some player versus player thing that he becomes immune? They let him come back to his seat.
Yeah, it was bordering on Will Smith that as behavior, right? I mean, without the assault part of it. But yeah, the letting him come back and sit for the rest really like makes you wonder what the rules are. I don't know. I'll have to read the back of the ticket stub because it doesn't seem like that's acceptable. Everything.
I don't
and like that sweater definitely wasn't acceptable.
I could care less. I don't know what our rules are because we've heard LeBron talk over the years about LeBron got people kicked out of the Indiana Pacers game.
Yeah.
And then this happened. He's like, oh, you know, that's my guy, Shannon Sharp.
My boy.
It's like, wait, you have to pick a side on this, LeBron. Are people sitting courtside allowed to start shit with the players in the court and respond to them and stand up and make it seem like there might be a fight or they're not?
Yeah.
Which one are we doing? Pick a side.
It takes 4 minutes to find any hypocrisy and Skip and Shannon. Skip talking about like these people that sit courtside feel entitled to be able to go after players. Like this was a few months ago, this argument, but I'm sure there's a difference somehow.
Very strange. There's like a 10% chance the whole thing was rigged. And it was like, hey, Dylan Brooks, come yell at me and then I'll yell at you and then come watch my show on Monday.
Yeah, well, but ESPN retweeted it. ESPN was all over. It was like a free commercial for them.
It was great. Mike Breen and Mark Jackson, I was actually watching. Mike Breen and Mark Jackson seemed horrified.
Mm-hmm.
They came back and they were just like, what the hell just happened? We almost had an actual fight on the court. All right. So the first game is San Francisco at Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome game. And I went with the traditional Philly by 3. I would have said 2.5, except I think Purdy's worth a half point for Philly.
Mm. You stumped me here because when you said 3, I was like, oh, I got this guy. I'm saying 4. They were, you know, they were what against the Giants? They were 7.5. It's got to be 4. 2.5 is right. You get it. 2.5.
I think San Francisco's a probably safer bet as a team. But the Purdy piece and then being in Philly are the two wrinkles. But it's an awesome game. I don't
really good.
I don't feel comfortable betting against the San Francisco team. Too many weapons. They can just roll out fucking McCaffrey on 3rd and 5. Send Kittle over the middle. McCaffrey's running a real route. Debo's running like a stop and start. Ayuk's going deep. Like, what the fuck do you do with this team?
Yeah, I know it. The kid fell into a great situation. And, well, first of all, we have to stick with San Francisco and Cincinnati. It's our Super Bowl pick from a month ago. But, yeah, I think it's going to be, and also public opinion is going to be riding the Philly high, right, versus San Francisco right. was lucky to get by Dallas kind of thing. So this is where the Niners sneak up on him, I think.
I mean, even that play, what was it, like 3rd and 15? Jennings all the way across the field got out of bounds. Like, because he's the fifth option on the play. Like, what are they going right. to cover? Everybody in the team? I want that line to get to 3, and I'm going to take San Francisco. If it's 2.5, I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
Well, we got a nice teaser staring us in the face here, if you look at the second one. But
second one I had, what did I send you?
You said 3.5, Kansas City favored.
Kansas City favored by 3.5. That was factoring in. I would have said 4, except the Mahomes. Mahomes, mm-hmm. high ankle sprain, he's fine. Tony Pollard went down like he was shot. I guess there's differing types of high ankle sprains, but
right.
Everyone's like, no, Mahomes will be fine. I find it hard to believe he's going to be fine. Mac Jones had a high ankle sprain. He was gone for like 3.5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like that should affect the line a little bit. What'd you have?
You said 3.5. I said 3. It's 1.5, which makes me think this is not a high ankle sprain. Also, isn't the
Wait,
walking boot
it's KC almost, by 1.5?
KC by 1.5.
What the fuck?
This is not a high ankle sprain.
What do you think? It's like a broken ankle?
I think there's something broken. I know there's tendons that are messed up in ligaments in a high ankle sprain anyway, but there's no walking boot. There's nothing consistent with a high ankle sprain here, I don't think. I think it's a little more than that.
So if Mahomes was 100% healthy, what's the line? 4?
3.5, 4, right?
People are really impressed by Cincy.
Yeah, the Bills were 5.5. That was a mistake. So it couldn't be really more than 4 at this point.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, this is something bigger. Like, people were mad at Romo was saying, I think he's going to play. I think he's going to do it. And everyone got mad. Everyone's like, of course he's going to play. And I think he will play, but I also think it's worse than they're letting on.
Interesting. Not great. Not great, Jim. Here we go, Jim. Mahomes can't move, Jim. Here we go.
These guys. Are you kidding me, Bill?
You're going to have to take Patrick Mahomes' leg off and hit him over the head and knock him unconscious with it. That's the only way he's missing this game.
This right? guy can hop around on one leg and bat it 30 yards with his crutch. He can do it all.
We have to apologize to Mike Tirico, by the way, because we didn't praise him enough for how awesome his fumble call was last week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because after we did the pod, I was on Twitter and a couple people had that call. And it really was like great.
Excellent.
Especially coming off that bizarre Al Michaels game.
Right, right.
He really lit it up.
Yeah, it was a game-changing call. I'm all, you know, I love Al and everything. But he's like, you know, I don't know. There's a fine line between Vin Scully leaving like 3 minutes of silence for the Bill Buckner play. And just not really saying anything on a game-changing.
And not being alive.
You know? Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right. Let's.
Well, we got teasers. We got teasers, right? I mean, just now, right now, we got +8.5 and +7.5. It's good enough.
So you're saying Niners, Bengals, tease?
Yeah, sure. Keep it going. We're riding the high. We're doubling up on our blackjack winnings. We're doubling down.
I had a 5-team tease this weekend that the Giants screwed with me. And this is why you don't do 5-team teases, but all the other ones hit where it was like, it was a 7-pointer, like San Francisco to +3.5 and, you know, KC and Jacksonville and Cincinnati up to 12.5. It was a great one.
Giants kept you just interested enough when they made it, what, 28-7? What were you getting, 14.5 on a teaser?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it felt like they might get a cheapie at the end.
Yeah, well, they kept punting on 4th and 5. They're like, no, we have 7 more possessions. Like, no, you have 2. What are you doing?
What was that?
I don't know, Dable. I don't know.
All right, let's take a break and do Parent Corner. So our special guest, I knew Sal was going to be devastated after this Dallas loss.
Thank
and the
you.
Only thing that could cheer him up is a smoking James Baby Doll Dixon on a Zoom. Look at it. Sounds a different guy.
I love it.
Completely rejuvenated.
Wow, baby.
Baby, I also
this is
have,
great.
I have my Coca-Cola.
Oh.
I need my caffeine at 11:20 at night. But,
yeah, it's late by you, right?
Sorry about your Cowboys, baby. You know, what a dud of a game that was, though, huh?
Well,
I was going to say, and I think I said to you earlier, better than to be a Giants fan, right? Giants, it was over. Oh. It was painless unless you, like, Simmons had him plus 14 and a half on the teaser. You had to actually watch the second half. But yeah, I still am a firm supporter of it's better to get blown out than lose a devastating close game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Baby.
No, it was.
We're having you on not just to cheer, not just to cheer Sal up. This is making him so happy right now.
I love
now.
It. Baby, look at the smoke.
For the listeners, baby's just having a cigarette right now, which is great. But it's the 20th anniversary show of our cousin Jimmy.
Yeah.
Can week. You believe it?
You put the whole show together. You saved it from cancellation. You hired everybody. You take all the credit now.
I actually take all the credit. Jimmy was just a mere bystander in this whole process. not at all. Not at all. I mean, it is kind of a miracle that we're on the air 20 years later. I mean, once we hit our groove in season, what would you say? Season what? Like
18, 19. No,
it was right around when he did the fucking Matt Damon video. Yeah, it was like late 2000s when it was this is going to be on now for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I say, you know, I jotted down some quick math as I watched him take drags off the lung dart there. Baby in 20 years made $187 million off the show. How much did you sell to Spotify? It's a close race between you two.
I made a few million less than Simmons, but yes, they're close.
At one point, baby was.
It's been a good couple of decades for us all, right? I mean, come on, all of us. It's been really good, but
it's true.
But I didn't really understand how Hollywood worked, but at one point in the show, baby was representing the host, most of the producers and all the writers. He was somehow negotiating on both sides and he was the same agent each way. Yeah. I didn't understand how you pulled that off, baby.
By the way, also the same exact thing for the competing show, the Colbert. Like,
right. Listen. And he had Jon Stewart and Colbert. I don't know. How did you do this,
conflict,
baby?
Is good, you know? Listen, I'm like Salazzo from The Godfather. I'm a businessman.
Well, that's a Godfather
expensive,
reference.
You know?
I don't know how you pulled it off. You had
baby's now on his third cigarette in 4 minutes. I don't know how he pulled that off.
No, this is my first dart, okay. Baby.
Doll. Wait, baby, right. let's go back to 2002. Mm-hmm. So ABC is gonna launch a late night show, and it seems like it's gonna be with Jon Stewart, your client. Right? Jon Stewart's doing really well on the Daily Show. He's the leading contender to get the show, but they decide that they're more interested in Jimmy Kimmel, who's also your client, and now you have both people being considered for the show.
This is where he's not going to be truthful, but go ahead. We'll let him speak. Go ahead.
This is where I lie, cuz?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. This is where I fudge.
That's it. He's going to start smoking furiously.
Nah, you know what it was? They definitely like both of them, but as Bob Iger will tell you, as he did the other night, it was a financial decision. John was already making a fair amount of money on The Daily Show. And they looked at the numbers and they went, maybe we like Jimmy and he connects with the audience. Let's give him a shot. So, and John, honestly, John was not pining for this in any way. And,
he was pissed. He was a little bit pissed.
No, not at all.
Tiny bit.
Not really.
It was awkward. Was it not awkward?
A tiny bit, but I will say this, that the best decisions were made, right? Imagine if John left the Daily Show, 15 years before he left. I mean, that show became iconic. It was generational, right? So I think everybody did fine.
But you must have been, I'm sorry, Bill, but you must have been over the moon because that's two giant commissions you take instead of Jay Stu just moving from Daily Show to another high-paying gig.
That was exactly how I prioritized it. That's right, cousin.
However you did it. No, but you must have, like, holy shit, how did this work out for me? You must have been, a little bit.
I mean, it worked out fine, but that certainly wasn't part of the calculus.
All right.
It really wasn't.
That wasn't the worst job he did repping Jon Stewart. It was when he let Jon Stewart get suflexed in WrestleMania or whatever that was.
It wasn't even. It was Monday Night Raw
after that.
And I do it again.
I told him to sign the waiver, not sign the waiver, and he did it anyway. You know, sometimes your clients don't listen to me.
Yeah, I did it too. Yeah.
So when during that first year, when did you think the show was going to get canceled? When did you resign yourself to the fact that the show is getting canceled? And when were you completely shocked that it wasn't going to get canceled and it was just going to keep going?
I would say 6 months in, it was teetering, right? And then after the first year, after we lasted the first year, I have to say that it's going to sound gratuitous and on some level, but
of course,
Jimmy was, maybe the show wasn't catching on per se, but I think the network recognized that Jimmy was uniquely talented, and mm-hmm. they were smart enough to hold on to him and go, these shows take a while to find their footing, especially mm-hmm. a new show at ABC. They've never really had a late night talk show to compete with CBS and NBC. And they saw that Jimmy was deeply talented. And if they let him go, he was going to go somewhere else and compete against them. And to their credit, they stuck with him. And here we are.
Sal, what was the single most unbelievable or offensive thing you saw Baby Doll do behind the scenes with celebrities in Jimmy's dressing room? What was the time he shocked you the most?
It. I'm not even allowed to say it on this. You'll have to cut it out.
All right.
No,
there's a lot of them.
There was one where he ambushed Sean Penn and started talking about the good old days and one night specifically that they had in Hollywood where it was him and who's the guy that does the truck commercials? Dennis Leary.
He used to do it.
He doesn't do it better. Okay. You're driving around and maybe there was some extracurricular activity. And Sean Penn did not want anything to do with this. And there's this, his publicist is like, yeah, who is this man? Get him out of here. What is going on? And baby demanded to have the whole story like supported by Sean Penn. He's like, he wouldn't confirm it at all. Baby
it
just was
great
right out
that
of there.
He was like 3 minutes from going on the air
right,
while
too.
I confronted
yep.
him. That was my timing was impeccable. I apologize, Sean. Publicly apologize for that moment.
Baby, why are you so tan right now?
What's going on?
Are you in a tropical location? You're very dark.
I am. I am in Florida. I'm at my house in Florida. I've been here mm-hmm. since December 28th. And yes, I do work from here, Bill. I was the original creator of working remotely before the pandemic.
Really were. You invented it.
gets me crazy, Simmons. We're in the house, right? We're living in LA and we're pale. We look like powder right here. And baby is, it's middle of January. It's darker than Tiffany Haddish. Like, I'm not sure how are you doing this, baby?
I'll tell you, the weather's been spectacular. Yeah. A lot of outdoor activities, a lot of exercise. Tons of golf. Mm-hmm. It's been good.
Can you brag about how great your daughter's wedding was and how lavish everything was
for the audience? Yes. Oh, I can brag.
I think
yes.
they want to hear about it.
If you allow me, I'll just brag for the next half hour. But no, it was pretty spectacular, I will say.
Did we talk about it, Simmons?
I'm sorry, you missed it, Bill.
I have a lot of regrets.
The 20th anniversary party there, they have to build this tent, right? Because there's 650 people. It's probably, 200 staffers plus their plus ones. That's currently. And then everybody from the past 20 years. So there's about 600 or 700 people. So they build this huge tent. And Baby had someone commissioned to build a tent in Florida for his daughter's wedding a couple of months ago. And he's like, look at this piece of shit tent. Look at it. You can see through the ceiling. You can see. Look at that. You can see through. What is that?
I like how you smoked underneath the tent. You didn't care that you were violating the indoor rules.
No. He'd smoke a blimp.
Said,
he wouldn't
look,
care.
Look at the plastic, for God's sakes, you know?
Baby, so our guy's hitting 20 years and looking at the late night scene and it's like Colbert and it's Fallon and it's Kimmel. And then I wonder, like, is this like the last of that era? Because these shows, at some point they become like institutions. Everything's paid for. You have the set, you have the building, you have the office, you have everything. And it just becomes the big variable is basically the host salary. how does somebody else move into this world? Will anybody ever do it again? TikTok, everything's so fractured. Is this it? Are these the last three guys?
I don't think so. I think it's still, believe it or not, I think it's still a very viable business for the broadcast networks. I really do. I don't think they're going away. Yes, they're consumed in clips a lot more than they were. The ratings aren't what they, you know, the linear ratings are definitely down from even 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's still a unique time slot in the sense that advertisers can reach a certain demo that they don't, that they can't get in other day parts. And they charge a premium for it. Young men primarily. And I don't think it's the end of an era. I really don't.
Well, we found out last week, Stephen A. said he's going to replace Jimmy Kimmel when Kimmel steps down. I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah, he's going to be great. Because that's what, I mean, you look, and they do tons and tons of research, and that's what people just want to be screamed at for an hour straight before they go to bed.
At night?
Yeah, right before they turn in for the night. Yeah, that's good, Ben.
That was one of the funniest. We were talking about that last week. And I had dinner. We were talking about the focus groups. When basically the focus groups are like, I'm half asleep. Like, I don't really want to be threatened. I don't like the guest. This is when we had the guest host the first year for a week. They're like, I don't really like that. There's always another person with Jimmy. I just like everything that seems static and safe and something I'm used to, which was the complete opposite of the show we put together.
Baby had to have Jimmy's, talk with Dickie Barrett. To like, baby, you can't scream. That can't be the first thing people. It's like, all right, he's a ska rock band leader. We hired. What are you gonna do? He's our announcer. Baby's talking him off a ledge.
What were you gonna say, baby?
No, I was gonna say that Jimmy's show that we all attended and saw. I mean, I think the anniversary show is phenomenal. So clever and so well.
It got announced what it is, so I don't feel like we're spoiling it. He got all the same guests from the first show, which was George Clooney, Coldplay, and Snoop. I'm blanking on the third. And Snoop Dogg is the guest host. Yeah. But he would be the host, so
and
he ran it back.
Snoop as the guest host. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's I would fun. Have said if you had said. A, that the show would exist in 20 years. I would have been like, that sounds amazing. I'm surprised, but great. But then that those three people, what would you give Snoop to still be even alive 20 years later in 2003, right?
Same thing, right? Like he was actually, he started so young in the business. He was so young then. He's still pretty young. I think he's like 53 or thereabouts. Mm-hmm. But yeah, who knew? And I just thought that Jimmy's, the way some of the I won't give it away, but some of the stuff he did on the show is it's pretty phenomenal, right? Like some of the technologies. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Right. Baby Sallow has felt like you love Jay Stu the most out of all your clients.
Oh, no
like,
question.
That was like your favorite client. It was a running joke with us about like, you know, you had a bunch of sons and daughters, basically. You're the dad, but you have the one favored. Feels like Jimmy's kind of moving in a little bit on Jay Stu. I don't know. What do you think, Sal? Is it like 50-50 now?
I guess. So at some point, Jimmy now, like, you know, just doing this extra 3 years. I mean, that's huge for baby and his vacationing and everything.
Right, that's another house for you.
Yeah, it's definitely another house. I will say Carson Daly, I think, moved into the number one spot for maybe 6 months when he wanted to, like, golf with baby and baby's very excited, another scratch golfer, but he now wants nothing to do with baby. So yeah, I think it's back down to Jay Stu against Jimmy.
And finishing last, Corolla.
Do you love all your children equally?
No.
I love it. I love you all equally.
Wrong question for Sal.
I could say yes, but no, that's not the answer. Yeah.
Right. Well, other
stick
than
around for parent
Bill,
corner,
do you love your two children equally?
Yeah, it depends what day. Well, the thing with Carson was like his ability to just not only play golf with baby, but be really good at golf.
Right.
Really, like, was a way to win.
It's a bragging point.
Well, Carson moved in around the corner. You know, it was really meaningful to me. He lives literally a block away.
Well, it is gratuitous, but I echo Baby's sentiment. Jimmy worked hard in spite of all the how crazy it looked on air and everything. He continued to always work so damn hard and so funny and was really good to the ABC people. And they think they recognize that, you know, that upfront presentation goes a long way, right, Baby? And just doing things like that.
Absolutely.
And working around the clock and helping, I'll say it, Iger write speeches and stuff like that. You know, it's all there, and it's every month, and every month there's something that he has to step up for.
That's right. These are, it looks easy to the audience, you know, It really does. It's just so smooth and easy, and it looks like it's
easy
flows,
to you. You don't even watch, so it looks really easy.
Yeah,
that's true.
You have your assistant watch and send you bullet point notes on what happened. What are you talking about?
You know, that's a really good point. I should have led with that, but you know, Jimmy does the show all day long, goes home, has dinner, and then works on the next night show until midnight. It is a daily slog.
Yeah, that is
the daily slog is what Jon Stewart is going to be doing in 6 years. I don't know if Baby's going to commission it for 15
It's the sequel to The Daily Show, The Daily Slog.
That's it. That's right.
Baby, can you talk about the last negotiation with ABC? Because Jimmy was going to retire. That was going to be it, right? But you sniffed a certain smell that you've been used to over the years. It's the smell of green cash.
Yes.
And you were like, you know what, Baby, you're not retiring yet. And
it's hard to smell over his cologne.
He decided that was it, that would have been fine. Because Jimmy's
letting him quit. You weren't letting him quit.
Jimmy's never going to retire and do nothing. Mm-hmm. He'd just do something else and work equally as hard. Mm. Yeah. So I wasn't really concerned. I just didn't think it was time, honestly. Jimmy's 55 years old, and a lot was put on, 20 years, you know, I'll just do 20 years and that's it. And I was like, you know, it's just a number. It really doesn't.
I mean, Sal, he's being diplomatic, but he's done a lot of bragging about this last deal in private.
Too much bragging. Way too much.
He doesn't even have to work during the summers. Like there's been a lot of braggadocio about this one.
Right, exactly. He brags about the deals he's gotten for Corolla too. It's just bragging.
I think, should we do Parent Corner with Baby here?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, he is a baby.
Baby, you got to stay for Parent Corner. Sal, you're
all right,
up.
Go ahead, Baby.
All right. So it's like this Burger King campaign, right? With the jingle is. I think it's one like we've never, ever seen before, right? You had like the what's up guys, but this jingle, and I guess because we watch football, I feel like we went from Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You in December, right into this jingle nonstop every single day, every telecast, every everything, right? And so you're singing it around the house, and I'm like running around saying marinara mozzarella, but and my wife is like, she's like, shut up already. And then I don't think I've ever been moved as much by a commercial. Like, you know, you get the State Farm jingle, like a good neighbor, State Farm, like, and it's in your head, but I'm not going to change my insurance company every 3 months because of that, right? It's stupid, right? So, but this Burger King worked. It worked. The other night, we're sitting around, and I'm trying to get over a cold Monday night, and I don't want to crap on sponsors if they're whatever.
Did you get a Vegas cold?
I got a Vegas cold. I think between Vegas and the Kimmel party, I think, like, you know, 650 people there. But
yeah.
So anyway, I'm trying to shake it off. Not a good idea to shake it off with three orders of onion rings and chicken mozzarella and all that stuff, because I was out for the count for the rest of the week. But my son, Harrison, is so taken back by this commercial. He's on a travel baseball team and they have walk-up songs. And his right now is the Edwin Diaz, like the Timmy Trumpet thing, which just makes me sad now anyway. I'm like, all right, just so he wants to change it. And he's going to next week to the freaking Burger King jingle. He's going to get up there and it's like batting fourth. Harrison Icono, eat like a king while on a budget. Three tasty options, fried shrimp and nuggets. Just confirm that's real price. Two field meals of $5.95. I mean, we're going to hear this. I mean, has anyone ever experienced this in their life? Is this song taking over your life like it is ours? I don't know what to do anymore. I just have to give in.
That is the funniest goddamn thing I've ever heard.
It's brilliant. It really is. I noticed the same thing. You're kind of like bobbing your head back and forth when you hear it. It's a great job by them.
You know, and then that Burger King thing ends with, "You rule," right?
That's
right. It's like very clever.
It's crazy.
My parent corner, it's my daughter's senior year of high school, and it's soccer season and competitive league. There's been some, she's been in this, you know, 4 years of soccer for her. So you get teams that you don't really like. Really don't like Campbell Hall, which is a school in LA. They had a coach who's, I'm just going to say it, pretty obnoxious. He was obnoxious when she was a freshman, really loud. Last year they had, our team wasn't good last year. They had a big lead, was really like whooping it up. May have said something not that nice about one of our players that was overheard, became a point of contention after the game, whether he said it or not. So we played them this year and we beat them at Zoe's school, and it was great. We were super happy, like, screw this guy. And he was a little more subdued after what happened last year. So we go there, we play them on Thursday, pouring rain. There's this ref, hadn't seen the ref before. Shaky call against us. Another shaky call against us. It's a whole first half of terrible calls against us, and we're getting madder and madder. 0-0. Like a minute left. Throw in our side deep. The linesman is right next to it, points like, oh, it's going the other way toward us. So we're about to do the throw in. Guy comes in, overrules it. Like the ref that the NFL ref we were all talking about today, that Carl, what's that guy, Carl, whatever?
Jeffers? Is that-
yeah. Overrules it. All of a sudden it's a throw in for them. They end up getting a go off the throw in. So we're going nuts. We're going crazy. They're kids, there's fouls, like they're not getting called. We're starting to get worried. I'm like getting mad. I'm like, is my daughter going to be hurt in this game? She gets nailed a couple times. We end up over the course of this game, we get, I think, 6 yellow cards from yelling. One of the parents on the sideline gets thrown out. I'm going nuts the whole game. I'm yelling. I get exchanged words with the Campbell Hall coach at one point. It's 2-0. They get their second goal. The kid's clearly offsides. They don't call it. So with like 5 minutes left, we do a corner kick. One of our kids heads it in. And my daughter, who both of you know, really sweet kid, has played soccer her entire life, has never gotten a yellow card ever in her entire life. She's running back and runs by the ref and sarcastically claps.
Nice.
Right next to him. Ooh. And he yellow cards and kicks her off. And I was so proud. I've never been more proud of bad behavior from either of my kids.
So yeah, you should really, you should give her a raise in her allowance for that one, Bill. That's a good one.
She was so mad. She almost got wiped out like 5 times. And at the end, she was like flying around trying to like nail somebody. And it was like, just you realize, especially in soccer, the wrong ref who just doesn't know what they're doing. Like somebody get really hurt. So we're all watching this going, we just don't want anyone to get hurt, but we're also mad we're getting screwed. Anyway, right. Campbell Hall, they paid off the refs. My least favorite school. I always told people don't go to Campbell Hall. That place sucks. Fuck you, Campbell Hall.
Wait, baby, what did she do? She just clapped? I mean, refs can't even take if you clap.
She went right over and clapped like right kind of near his face.
You know what she should have done? She should have clapped and then right in the face said, marinara mozzarella. Let's see what they do. What are you going to do then?
I'm going to do a grant. How about this one? You know, I'm going to be a grandparent, right?
Yeah baby doll.
So right, I'll do a grandparent's corner at the appropriate time. I'm ill-prepared for the parents' corner tonight.
Oh, okay. Well, it's your daughter that's going to have the baby, right?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's your daughter that's going to have the baby, right?
Correct. Mm. We don't know if it'll be a boy or a girl, but in May.
Wait, nice. Parent corner, quickly. The dad-daughter dance at the wedding. So you've had 2.
Yes.
More or less emotional than you thought?
Mm.
Good question. I'd say less, believe it or not, because I think I probably built myself up for that moment. I think the most emotional moment is when they actually get married at the altar for me. On both cases, that's where I got my most emotional, when they actually did their vows and got married in front of everyone. That was the moment.
It was very nice. I'll say there wasn't a dry eye in the $500,000 tent. We'll say that.
Listen, I paid people to cry, Sal. That was part of it.
That's true.
You know?
Exactly.
Nice. But seriously, yeah, the dance was fun. And as Jimmy will tell you, And I will admit, you know, I always had, I'd say, decent rhythm, as they say, but I was always a decent dancer. But I did take lessons at the Manhasset Fred Astaire Dance Studio.
Oh, look at you.
I did. Grace didn't, of course, but I took them, and then we kind of did it remotely. And then when I saw her down here the week before, we practiced a little, and most of it went out the window at the actual dance, which kind of pissed me off because I spent a lot of time trying to learn these dances to the songs.
Yeah,
but
can't take it with you. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but the video.
Well, make her
good.
Pay for it. Man, she probably got some nice cash gifts there.
She got a few dollars. Yeah.
Mike August probably sent her a lot of some nice money. Yeah.
Did you make up with Mike August, baby?
I'd say so, right? At the
It seemed half-hearted. Honestly, it didn't seem like you totally forgave
him. I can't tell yet. Honestly, I can't tell yet.
It's a work in progress.
It's TBD, yes.
All right, to wrap up Parent Corner, Sal is addicted to the Burger King commercials. Baby Doll says, seeing your daughter getting married on the altar is more emotional than the dance. And Campbell Hall pays off soccer referees at the high school level. Those are three lessons from Parent Corner. Baby Doll, congratulations on putting together Jimmy Kimmel Live and carrying it for 20 years along with the host.
Thank
but really you.
You.
It was really you. You did most of the work.
It really was.
And made most of the money.
Yeah, some of it. Yeah, definitely. A multiple thereof. But no, I'm really happy for Jimmy and Molly and the staff and everyone who's there's been about a dozen people who've been there from day one. And it's pretty incredible. Yeah.
Well, and thanks for coming, Bill. This was a nice surprise for me. You're right. It did lift my spirits and really
good.
For Baby to jump out. You know, he's not due to be done with his vacation until I think mid-March. So that thank you for jumping on.
Then he's got to get ready for taking the summer off.
I segue right into the Oscars and then into Martha's Vineyard.
Oh,
it's a beautiful thing.
What a life. What a life.
Sal, sorry about the loss. Good job by you. Good to see you as always. This was produced by... Kyle Creighton, as always, I will be back on this podcast on Tuesday. You can listen to Sal on the Extra Points Network. You can hear Baby on his podcast with Adam Carolla on Podcast One called The Agent and the Client. It's a new podcast coming out. It's great.
Agent and the Agent.
And I will see you on this feed on Tuesday. Thanks.
And if you had over 5.5 cigarettes, you won.
Yeah, that's right. You had how many? You have three? Four?
I saw him light up. He lit up, unless you're lighting up the same one. It was about four or five. In there. I don't know.
I had three or four. I don't know. I lost track. Right. But
great job,
but
baby.
Thanks for having me on. Good to see you guys.
Love you,
baby. Thanks for coming.
All right, baby. Love you. Take care.